From WX69 News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made back on July 10th when a listener of this program sent an email. On Connections, we just discussed the growing local food movement. This year, we've examined CSAs, the Good Food Collective, and many other issues. That July day, I regret to report, was 86 degrees, sunny. Isn't that a nice thought today? Just about everything was growing happily in midsummer, so it's easy to eat local food when you have a lot of options. Our listener shifted his attention to the lean winter months. He wrote, quote, "The question I want you to ask your panelists when they next meet is how they propose one can eat and cook with fresh, local, and maybe even organic food in Rochester, New York, in February, March, other than potatoes, beets, and turnips. It is not without reason that all the local farm markets have disappeared by Thanksgiving. I have never heard or seen this question seriously addressed. In the meantime, those clementines, lemons, bananas, fresh greens, and grapes look mighty good in the course of week after week, during which the sun never shines." That was the email. So this hour, we're aiming to answer that question. How do we eat locally sourced food all year long? Our guests in studio, Sue Gardner-Smith is here of the Brighton Farmers Market. And let's, Sue, right off the bat, there is a local farm market that goes year-round.
There is.
Our listener thought there wasn't.
There is, and I'm happy to be able to pass the word along. We've had a winter farmers market actually since 2008. Mm-hmm. We meet every Sunday afternoon from 1 to 4 in Brighton's Brookside Center. We have an amazing variety of farmers and product from this whole area. It's all local food. Many of the farmers are organic. So, yeah, I hope your listener hears this and finds us.
Okay, and we're going to be talking about what you offer and all of those things coming up here. We also have in studio Dennis LaPelle of Lakestone Family Farm. Dennis, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Evan.
Thank you for being here. And Paul Loomis of Growing Family Farms. Paul, where are you located?
We're in Parma, Spencerport, right about 20 minutes west of the city.
Okay, in a minute we're going to be joined by Sandy Munson of Fisher Hill Farm, and on the phone with us we have Mitch Gruber, who is the Community Food Access Manager at FoodLink. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, a note for our listeners. Thank you for tolerating the host this hour. I want to tell you, I feel great. I have been terribly sick all week. This is the best I have felt and the worst I have sounded. So I'm going to do my best to talk as little as possible and leave it up to our wonderful guests. And let me just start by going around the table, and I'm going to kind of move backwards here and start with Paul. Paul.
Yes.
What do you guys grow, and what do you eat when the weather is like this?
Well, we do a lot of cold hardy winter greens, the Asian greens. We also do mushrooms, which we dry for the wintertime. Shiitakes have a lot of properties that help the immune system and build the vitamin deficiencies, and that's one of the ways we do that. As far as root crops, we store beets, radishes, some rutabaga, and then squash. We store them as well.
Okay. And Dennis LaPelle, same question for you.
Well, being that we are, similarly climate from Spencerport to Farmington.
To Farmington, yeah.
Yeah. I have many of the same things. Kohlrabi is something that's often overlooked as a nice, real fresh vegetable that you can have out of the cold storage in the wintertime. Hakurai turnips that we also store that can be eaten raw, not the typical, boiling and mashing type of turnip. And then we also raise chicken at our farm that we've grown extra in advance that we have now in storage frozen. And our hens will lay eggs all winter long.
Dennis, part of, I think, I'm coming in with an assumption. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but part of the message for our listener who sent that email, which again I think is filled with great questions, there's parts of it where he's wrong. There is a farmer's market. There are farm markets that go throughout the year, and there are ways to eat locally sourced food throughout the year. But at the same time, if he's looking for clementines, lemons, bananas, or fruit, in other words, that comes right out of the ground, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying in the winter, historically, human beings do eat a lot of meat in the winter and a lot of things that can go through cold storage. And I mean, our eating habits do change by necessity, right?
Absolutely. That's something to consider, too. If you're really looking to be on a local food diet, you need to really take a close examination of what local food is for where you live. And that's how you can, you know, tailor your diet in the wintertime to eat the foods that, that are, you know, available locally. And the, and those things are oftentimes what your body is craving, you know, that time of year anyhow. You're, you know, everyone thinks about a nice, hearty, warm meal in the winter. So a lot of times it is those, you know, root crops that'll do that for you.
And we don't mind a little insulation in the winter anyway, Dennis.
Absolutely not.
That's right. Sandy Munson's here from Fisher Hill Farm. Where is Fisher Hill Farm, Sandy?
We're in Bristol with a Canandaigua mailing address.
So. What do you grow and what do you eat in the winter?
Very similar to Paul and Dennis, the root crops, winter squashes, potatoes. We do sweet potatoes, cabbage, carrots, parsnips. Trying to think of what we've had for dinner this week. That's mostly the I feel kind of bad for my kids, although they're young enough that they haven't yet complained, but we eat a lot of potatoes, a lot of carrots. I try to do different things with them, but you know, sometimes there's just not a lot. We roasted up some butternut squash, roasted up some carrots.
And later this hour we're going to talk to John Bolton, who grows hydroponically. And I know that there, you know, I don't know that there is a big argument in the farming community, other than the fact that for those who are really adherent to organic practices, they may have some discomfort with hydroponic growing. But we're going to talk about that later because, again, a lot of what people eat locally comes from people like John in the winter. So there's a lot to look at there. Let me also ask Mitch Gruber from FoodLink. Tell me about the mission of FoodLink in terms of just how tied you are now to the local food movement, Mitch.
Yeah, it's a great question, and just to kind of frame where I'm coming from, FoodLink and food banks in general historically have focused on issues of food security and really trying to feed the symptom of hunger. And what FoodLink has been doing with a suite of programs over the last 3 to 5 years is trying to actually focus on some of the causes of those problems, so actually trying to impact food access while also maintaining a lot of the food security initiatives that we have. But I can't tell you enough. I mean, not a day goes by without me thinking about how do we extend our programs further on into the season. You know, we're dealing exclusively with a SNAP and WIC eligible population in low-income neighborhoods, and it's very contradictory to be out there and say, you know, in our farm stand program, for example, hey, everyone should eat fresh and local, and then kind of have to close up shop come October, November. So this is something that we've been really working on for the past couple of years. And just to give you a very quick glimpse into what we do, one of our programs that I oversee is called our curbside market, which is essentially a farmer's market on wheels. And though there aren't there aren't actually farmers on the vehicle, we have the products of anywhere between 10 and 20 farmers, usually between 15 and 25 different items. And last year was our first year running it, and we went all the way through Thanksgiving. And this year we're extending the season. We're going into January. So we're taking small steps to see what is it that the community that we serve wants. And, you know, you're not going to be surprised to hear that our numbers do, in fact, dwindle quite a bit from in peak season in August, September, to where we are now at the end of November. And I can't even imagine what December is going to look like. I'm still going to crunch the numbers to find out. But a lot of it is because of the items that we serve. It's not just a matter of not wanting to go outside, but we don't have the melons anymore. We don't have those beautiful-looking tomatoes anymore. What we have are a lot of Brussels sprouts, squash, and a lot of the things that the farmers on the panel have already talked about. And it makes our job a lot more challenging, without a doubt.
I guess part of it, and maybe our panel in studio wants to jump on this, is just finding new ways to prepare food. I mean, Sue, at the Brighton Farmers Market, you get to see a lot of this stuff. And I just think we have to probably be a little bit more creative. What do you think?
I think we do have to be more creative, but I do think a lot of credit goes to our farmers for adding a lot of technologies and strategies to their operations to bring some of the foods that we might consider summer-only products into much later into the season and much earlier in the season as well. When we talk about season extension, we're not only talking about going later than you would expect, we're also talking about starting earlier than you would expect. So a lot of the farmers have put in high tunnels, which are kind of a greenhouse type operation. They've put in storage, which allows a lot of the products, fruits, apples, you can still get apples and pears and things like that.
High tunnels, is that hydroponic again? Forgive me. Not the same.
No, it's just not a greenhouse. The
same. Just a greenhouse.
Basically.
Okay.
So it allows, you know, solar benefits growing to come into the into this thing. I mean, they can't, you can't operate a high tunnel in the heart of February necessarily, but these farmers can talk to you more about that. But in terms of variety, there's a lot more variety than you would expect. The first year we did a farmer's market was in 2008. It was the first year of our summer market, and we were approaching fall and thought, hey, this is cool. People love farmer's markets. Let's see if we can't go a little further. We had some farmers that had product and wanted to keep going. And so we actually, that was a collaboration with the South Wedge Market. It was called the Long Season Market. And we had a lot of turnips and rutabagas that winter, and not a lot else. I mean, part of that was the farmers didn't know what we were doing. This was new. But since that time, the amount of food, the variety of food, the different kinds of foods that they're able to bring to market have really just expanded in a tremendous way. I mean, if you walk through our market right now, it's amazing what you see. It's not just carrots and root crops. There's a lot of other food there. I think it's beautiful. I take my camera with me every market to take pictures of all the beautiful food. But in January, it's tougher. In February, it's tougher. And yeah, you have to be more creative. Although I think, as Dennis was mentioning, the approach of food from a seasonal standpoint, it's really a rewarding way to look at food. We've become so accustomed to melons in January and clementines from Spain and grapes from Chile that we forget what it's like to really be connected in a seasonal way to the food that we eat. And I think I really have come to appreciate it. As you said, Dennis, your body kind of craves it. But I also think when we eat seasonally, it's also more of a connection to place. We're more connected to this beautiful part of the country. And challenging as it can be to be here sometimes, when we eat the food that comes from this place, we feel more connected to this place.
Yeah, I don't think the purpose of this hour is to say that it's easy. I mean, or that it's just as easy in the cold months to find locally sourced food. Just to say that it is certainly possible.
Rewarding. I do think
absolutely.
That there are rewards.
Is it harder if you're vegan or vegetarian? I would think so. You just don't have the options of just eating meat all the time, like people like perhaps most of us are doing. But at the same time, again, I have to think that if you've never done it, if you've never challenged yourself to get through an entire winter eating almost all locally sourced food, it's probably great fun. And so let's go around, and I'm going to go around the table starting with Sandy. What'd you have for dinner last night?
Oh, shoot. I was already thinking about the next question that you were going to ask. Oh my gosh. No. Well, I did say we had roasted butternut squash and carrots, and I did throw in some non-local craisins. I probably could have used, I don't know, more local cranberries.
I mean, it's not like a test or anything. I'm just curious.
We had one of our chickens roasted. So what I was thinking, what was sort of in my head already when you threw me off with your question, when we're talking about the farmers planning,
yeah.
You know, what they're going to be planting,
right.
You can also, as the consumer, plan for the winter. And so we really did have fresh, in quotes, you can't see them, strawberries. We freeze strawberries in the summer. And so we had those for dinner last night, you know, and I'll cook up a bag and, you know, we'll use it for toppings on our waffles and things like that. So if you are going to plant, and this sort of goes back, you know, it does go back to our roots and, you know, in the 30s, 40s, all that, you know, when you canned things. Sorry, I'm not a canner. I wish I could be. I'm just not. But I'm a freezer. So we have corn, peas, and strawberries in our freezer. And that's kind of fun and rewarding. And it is like that when you mentioned an orange and how that used to be in your stocking at Christmas because it was a really special thing. And those are special, those strawberries. I almost don't want to use them sometimes because I'm like, how many more bags do I have?
I know. I'm so with you, Sandy. I mean, my son loves fruit smoothies that I make, and I love using whatever is local and in season. Peach season is the best for smoothies because they're so juicy and they're so delicious. And this year, my wife, we just got a couple of bushels and just cut them up, and I'm like, oh my gosh, these will last forever. And here we are just flying through them, and now I'm rationing the frozen peach slices, but they're still delicious. Is there anybody on this panel who doesn't freeze some of that stuff? I mean, Paul, you freeze them?
Yeah, I got, you know, probably 15 pounds of frozen blueberries and same thing, smoothies, and you know, my son eats that kind of stuff. So,
just thaw and find a place for
Even peppers, I freeze.
Yeah. We have peppers flowers. And onions.
Dennis, you're nodding over there?
Yeah, tomatoes we have frozen. We have frozen peppers, frozen beans, dried beans.
Okay. Yeah. So what you're seeing is that that's a great way. For the man who emailed this program, who sparked this idea, I mean, he's thinking of beautiful fruits in January. That's one way to think about doing it. And, you know, qualitatively, is it better to cut into something fresh? Well, sure. But, you know, Sandy, you're not complaining when you've got strawberries now,
yeah,
right?
They really were delicious. You
know? Although, Evan, yeah. one thing that I would add is, you know, study after study does show that if you can catch things at its, you know, peak, right after it's harvested, at peak nutrition and freeze it or can it, it's going to end up being a lot more nutritious, if we're talking about the nutritional side, than it is if it's quote-unquote fresh but shipped in from, you know, California or Chile or something like that.
Mitch, this is a very important point. I was going to ask you that question next. So, what you're saying, we're talking to Mitch Gruber from FoodLink. What you're saying is if you actually are concerned about nutrition, because some people have already asked this program, we were going to have that question today. If you slice up fruits and vegetables and freeze them, do you lose the nutritional quotient of that? Mitch, you're saying it's healthier to do that locally as opposed to buying from far-flung areas.
Without a doubt. And I would be more than happy to point people to a couple of different studies if they wanted to, you know, look on the website and find my contact information. It's not really my particular wheelhouse, but I have read some of these studies before. Cornell Cooperative Extension has talked about this a lot. I think one of the things that does need to be discussed is everyone can talk about how much they can freeze, you know, personally, but then when you start to talk about rationing it out in the long winter we have, one of the real vacuums in our market is there isn't a lot of opportunity to buy locally frozen product. And I think that's something that I've thought about quite a bit, because in the end, the infrastructure needed to freeze things on a large scale for retail is really, really prohibitive. It's cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I'm really proud to say is FoodLink has been really considering what the role of our commercial kitchen is FreshWise for a number of years now, and we're getting closer and closer to making a couple of changes over there. But one thing that we really see value in is adding a value-added processing line. So that doesn't mean we're going to be able to freeze everyone's stuff or, you know, for retail in every grocery store, but we're thinking about our agencies who have a really hard time accessing a lot of healthy foods year-round. If we can figure out how to take some of the excess produce that we have and freeze it on a small scale and make it available for our agencies, we know that we're making a big impact for them.
You got a lot of people in the studio nodding right along. Sandy, let me start with you. Thoughts on what he's saying there?
Yeah, we actually do the things I mentioned, the peas, the corn, and the strawberries. We do freeze for retail sales. The weeks that they're really flourishing in our fields, we will take the time and, you know, sacrifice some sleep those weeks and really get those processed up for sale in the winter, so they are available.
And Dennis, when he was talking about just cost prohibitive and some of those barriers, you were nodding as well.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense to buy something locally at a much better price than you can find, say, your strawberries at a supermarket this time of year, or even into January when they go to be $6 a pound or so. To buy a flat at the market and freeze it, you're going to have a tremendous cost savings for yourself as well. So it's economical to freeze things too.
Of course, you also have to have willpower to not eat them, because I'm always in mourning when strawberry season ends and when blueberry season ends. So it does require some willpower.
Sure does.
But before I even move on to the phones, and we've got, if you want to join the program, by the way, this hour, as we talk about eating local all year long, you can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, and you can join the conversation. Before we get to the phones, on this note that Mitch brought up here and that Sandy and Dennis have been talking about, what is it going to take? How long is it going to be until will we ever be able to walk into a grocery store and most of the frozen fruits and vegetables are locally grown? Is that ever going to happen? Mitch, what do you think?
You know, I've done a lot of research on this recently because of our interest in doing more freezing for the sake of our agencies and our network at large. And, you know, some of the equipment that's necessary to freeze things on a large-scale basis are, you know, certainly in the six figures, some of the equipment. It's very, very cost prohibitive, And not only that, but you need a whole lot of back end systems in place. There's different systems based on nitrogen or CO2, and I'm not going to get into, you know, the weeds there of discussing what it takes. But needless to say, it's a huge financial investment.
Yep.
And it's gonna take a very smart and shrewd entrepreneur to figure out how to do the large scale frozen to be able to do on a retail basis regularly. But I do think that we're moving more and more in that direction, because without a doubt, the reason this panel even exists is that local food is more in demand now than it's been in a long time.
Yeah, no question. Okay, so if you're just joining us as we talk about that, then let me ask Sandy, if people want to try to find frozen fruits and vegetables locally grown right now, where do they start looking?
Well, I think any of the sort of the offshoots or the extensions, the season extensions of your summer farmer's market. So if you had a favorite summer farmer's market, see if they have, you know, an extended season. Brighton, certainly, which, you know, if you're a South Wedge customer, you know, come over to Brighton. Canandaigua has an extended season. The Rochester Public Market does have, you know, I mean, everybody knows the Rochester Public Market. You know, it's a mix of different things, but we're there. You know, there's farmers there. We have our locally grown things. But definitely think about your favorite summer farmer's market and then do some research and call around and contact the manager and see if there is an extended season.
And if I remember correctly, Good Food Collective also offers, I think, some frozen fruits and vegetables.
I think they do part of a share.
For the winter shares?
Yeah.
For the winter shares. So at least those are options that are out there. Let me grab a phone call here because Joan has been waiting. Joan's in Henrietta. Thanks for calling Connections, Joan.
Hi. Excuse me. Yes. I used to teach dental hygiene down in Northern Virginia Community College, and the pharmacologist that taught our students said she felt a lot of our allergies now are related to the fact that our bodies don't ever get a rest and eat things in season. And so you're talking about, one of you mentioned about looking into studies, but I don't know if that's been studied or not, but I always thought that was interesting that she said that.
Anybody want to jump in on that? I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard that. It just reminds me of, like, you know, the honey thing where you eat local honey and you get those pollens. And so it might be something related to that, where you want to eat what's local and stick with what's grown in our soil.
Yeah.
And,
well, I don't know why she thought our body needs a rest from imported foods, but she did.
Paul, what do you think? Anyway. Thanks for the call, John. I appreciate that. What do you think, Paul?
Well, the dark leafy greens contain a lot of B vitamins, which fight depression in the winter. So, you know, having a winter salad with, you know, spinach or...
And those turnips, the fresh turnips.
Yeah, the fresh turnips. You're actually going to fight and keep yourself healthier and happier in the wintertime when the sun isn't shining and you're feeling blue and you get into a nice green salad.
See, that's interesting. I truly never even thought about depression or even seasonal affective disorder and leafy greens.
Yeah.
All right, well, we did not finish going around the table because Sandy gave us such an interesting answer on what she had for dinner last night. So, Paul, you're up. Paul Loomis is here from Growing Family Farms. What did you have for dinner last night?
Well, speaking of the dark leafy greens, I actually had some of Dennis's spinach with his radishes and some carrots. And we grow pea shoots at a farm, which we just gave some to Good Food Collective for their fall share. But and then I had some sweet potatoes, which we grow too, and with raw local honey from our hives.
Very nice.
What time do we eat?
By the way, Paul, you have raw local honey for your hives? Have you heard my voice today?
Yeah,
I could use about a gallon of your local honey for the tea that I've been drinking.
So I matched the sweet potatoes with that honey.
Wow.
It's a boom. I feel good all winter because I really do try to eat what is available to me. And so I do a lot of stir fry and whatever vegetables I have that day that I can harvest, it goes in a stir fry. And I eat predominantly vegetables and less meat in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So what's an example of a stir fry? Some of the components?
I know a lot of us grow bok choy and a lot of the Asian greens in the wintertime. Then, you know, I have chickens as well, so I can crack an egg in there and make some egg fried rice with bok choy, onions, garlic, carrots.
Some of those frozen peppers.
frozen peppers. And, you know, we also do stuff with Small World, which is another kind of concept. It's the fermented foods.
Fermented foods.
Right. So we're using some older technologies. You know, that's how they used to preserve food, you know, hundreds of years ago. And they're doing that, and they're usually using, like, a lot of local, all local produce from, you know, guys around here, Napa cabbage and whatnot, to make the kimchi and sauerkraut, which are also probiotic and healthy, and another way to get vegetables in your diet during the winter.
Very interesting stuff. All right, Dennis from Lakestone Family Farms, what did you eat for dinner last night?
We had a butternut squash soup with obviously our squash and some of our carrots that we harvested a while back and have in storage, with some of our fresh leeks thrown in there for a little onion flavor, and our own garlic. We put in some whole milk from First Light Dairy, who's also at the Brighton Winter Farmers Market. And that's what we had.
This is just showing off because you have three kids at home.
Yeah.
How do you do that with three?
Oh, the soup is easy. My wife, well, I can't take any credit for it. Not this time.
The soup is easy, but the peeling of the butternut squash, and do you roast it first?
Actually, the recipe we use doesn't call for pre-roasting, which is kind of nice, so it's a huge time savings. I actually walked into the kitchen around 6 o'clock and questioned whether or not we were going to have time for this meal.
Yes.
And by 7:15, we were eating, so it wasn't so bad.
Very good. Sue Gardner-Smith, can you tell us what you had for dinner last
night? I'm actually going to tell you what I had for breakfast today because
very
it
good.
Brings up a couple of other opportunities of things you can get at the market. I had some yogurt from First Light Farms, which is a wonderful yogurt and a wonderful farm. They also have milk and cheeses. And I had with that I had gotten some quinces from K&S Bishoping Farm, which I think that's really cool that you can buy kind of unusual fruits like quince at the farmer's market. And I had canned quince preserves, basically. And so I had some of that in my yogurt. And I had some toast from bread from Martha Jane's, which is a baker that we have at the market. So my point is you can also get food other than produce. You can get other things. And on that, I had some jam that I had made in the summer from strawberries from Fisher Hill Farm that I froze. It's frozen strawberry jam, so it tastes very fresh. So I just wanted to mention that it's not just fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of other products as well. Some dairy. We have eggs, meat, jams, honey, maple
syrup.
Products. Yeah, lots of wonderful maple products from Wolschlegels in Naples.
And Sue, remind our listeners when the Brighton Farmers Market is.
It's Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4. It's at the Brighton Brookside Center, which is a former school building. The address is 220 Idlewood Road. It's sort of a funny, this building has two different access points. The easiest way to get to it is right off of South Winton, just south of the Winton-Westfall interchange. We have a website, brightonfarmersmarket.org, which has a little map that shows how to find us. And it also, every week, it tells what the farmers are going to bring. So it actually, there's usually a very good listing of mm-hmm. the varieties of products available.
Do you have people during the winter months come from more far-flung places because their local farmers markets might not be running in the winter, and you are?
Yeah, I think we do. We actually, our summer market brings people from all over. I think one of the reasons our winter market is doing well is because our summer market has become a very well-known location for people mm-hmm. to get sustainably grown and really high-quality foods, and that the success of the summer market has really helped the winter market grow and become stronger. And people do come from a lot of different places. One point I really wanted to make about our market is the mission of the Brighton Farmers Market is something I take really seriously. It's to promote a stronger local food system. And in order for that to happen, there are two components to a local food system. It's the farmers and it's the customers. And you can't have one without the other. But it's really important to me, these farmers have basically half a year of good growing season. And they have an entire year of bills to pay and children to feed and animals to take care of. And in a traditional setting here in upstate New York, they wouldn't be able to get much revenue over the winter months. So it's really important to me to have this available for them as a way to stay in business. If they can't make money all year, maybe they can't stay in business. And where does our food system go if we don't have farmers? So to me, I think that's a really, really important reason why this market is important and why we want to keep it going and keep it thriving for the good of our farmers.
That's well said. Brighton's Farmers Market is year-round. And again, you mentioned Canandaigua has later extended season, if not year-round,
Sandy? We do year-round as well.
Okay.
It's just we do it in every other weekend.
Okay.
I think we even find at Brighton, I mean, we do get customers every week, but I think that it's sort of cyclical in the winter that because the things you're buying do store longer, a lot of them are the root crops. Maybe you don't want to go out every winter every winter weekend in the cold. So I do think that we even see at Brighton, there's a higher weekend and there's a lower weekend and there's a higher weekend. So in Canandaigua, we just do every other Saturday.
And every other Saturday, when to when?
It's only from 10 to 11.
Okay.
So it's just 1 hour because we're outside. But it's definitely worth it to fit it into your day planner and come find us. It's going to be this Saturday, the Saturday before Thanksgiving.
It was packed last time.
And
too.
It really was, with vendors and customers. We had more
vendors
than we expected, and we were kind of in the parking spaces, but we made it all work, and this week will be a little more organized.
Yeah, very cool stuff. I'm late for a break, but what I want to do with Mitch Gruber before I let him go, who is the Community Food Access Manager at FoodLink. Mitch, for people who've been listening to this conversation, again, everyone's in a bit of a different boat. Some of us can afford to sort of seek out farmers markets, whether we're going to drive to Canandaigua or Brighton or seek out sources of local food. Other people might not have as many means. Give us a sense for FoodLink's mission and how things are going, especially sort of in context of this conversation today.
Yeah, again, I wish there was a really easy answer, but what we're trying to do is figure out how can we continue to extend our programs as long as we can. And the curbside market is a great example of a way that we do that. And just a quick anecdote, you never asked me what I ate for dinner last night. I won't take it personally.
Oh, that's all right, Mitch. No, please. I'm glad you bring that up. I didn't mean to leave you out there. Go ahead.
But I wanted to say that I actually did roast up some butternut and acorn squash from Martin Farms out in Brockport. And one of the reasons why I mentioned that is because what we've been doing a lot is when we go out to the curbside market, we will bring out just roasted squash that we'll roast in our kitchen and give it out as some, for some samples to interested individuals at some of these sites. Because what you find a lot is that people will say, I don't like butternut squash. I'm not interested in squash. And then we have them try the squash, and oftentimes the response is, oh, it's just like sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
So one of the real important things for us on a continual basis is to make sure that we're always marrying our programs with continued education about nutrition and culinary education, what we call food literacy at FoodLink. And the more of that we can do, the more we'll be able to extend our programs further into the year. The last thing I want to mention before, I am sorry if you're late for the break, I won't...
No. Go ahead.
But another program I'm really excited to talk about is what we're calling our Community Store Initiative. What we know is that in a lot of neighborhoods throughout Rochester, the primary mode of food transactions take place at the corner store. And we, anyone who's been in a kind of typical corner store before understands there's really not a lot, if any, fresh or certainly local food within the store. And what we are doing is we're working on two specific stores, one at 352 J Street, one at 479 Carter Street. So one on each side of the river, and we're working on changing some of the infrastructure in the store. Because one of the big impediments to these store owners is that they don't necessarily know how to store produce. They don't know how to market produce. And it's not that the people in the neighborhood don't want it. It's that the store doesn't really necessarily know how to make it look good and look like it tastes, which we all know is really good. So we're working on a number of different programs to change the infrastructure top down in these stores, and then begin to incorporate more and more local foods into them. So right now we're still in the construction mode. I can't give you any final results or numbers, but I really look forward to, and certainly, Evan, I'll make sure that you are most definitely invited, and everyone around the table invited, to the ribbon cutting ceremonies when we do a kind of reopening of the stores. But we think this is a really, really interesting model. And are we going to be able to necessarily sell kohlrabi? Maybe not. I hope so in the long run. But what we do know is there's a lot of food that's still grown locally right now that people want, or still available locally. Certainly the apples and pears, the cauliflower and broccoli, the potatoes and onions, the squashes. These are all things that we can move locally. And the more of it we move, the better it is for everyone, including the farmers and including the people who are eating it and eating a more nutritious product.
Great stuff, Mitch. And when people hear FoodLink, you know, I think it's just great to hear some of the specific work that's happening, because it's nice to put these programs in perspective and let our listeners know what you are doing, what you're working on. And I hope that you will come back and update us, and we'll have future conversations about exactly that.
Please. Thanks so much for having me, and thank you to everyone on the panel for letting me join, too. I appreciate it.
You got it. Mitch Gruber is the Community Food Access Manager at FoodLink, joining us today. When we come back from our short break, John Bolton joins us, and we're going to expand the conversation about eating local in the winter months. You're hearing a full panel today. It's a full studio helping out a sick host. Actually, I feel great. I just don't sound great. I really feel good, though, so I don't think anybody in this room is in danger. If they would have. 4 days ago would have been a different story. Sue Gardner-Smith's here from the Brighton Farmers Market, Paul Loomis from Growing Family Farms, Dennis LaPelle of Lakestone Family Farm, and Sandy Munson of Fisher Hill Farm. John Bolton joins us next. Short break right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we look at the growth in the knowledge industry, a look at the Rochester Brainery. What's it modeled after? What kind of classes are they offering? How do they keep it affordable for you to learn how to use knife skills, or play the piano, or learn about science, or just about anything in between? The Rochester Brainery, next hour on Connections.
The old-fashioned crime of cattle theft is on the rise, and that means busy days for law enforcement.
Well, our uniforms are starched jeans, starched shirts, and wore-out boots, and a clean white hat. Good guys wear white hats.
Is that true?
Sure. Well, it is out here.
The cattle theft crime wave, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and here's something that makes me a little sad. I'm looking at a card that talks about the 2014-2015 Brighton Winter Farmers Market that runs to May 17th.
We don't call it the winter market at that point.
Okay, thank goodness. My gosh, by then we should at least see what? Asparagus? What are we going to see by May 17th?
Oh, lots of good stuff.
Lots
at that
of
point.
Good
spinach,
things.
Spinach, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lots of, yeah, absolutely. Wonderful.
Cucumbers.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
Do, yeah.
That's right.
Very good. Well, let me bring in John Bolton from Bolton Farms out in Hilton, right, John? Is that right?
That's correct.
Thanks for taking the time to join us. And why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do at Bolton Farms?
Well, we're actually our primary, we're for a local farm. We've been in farming for about 6 years now. We're going into our sixth winter, and we're a year-round farmer. We built some greenhouse facilities to help out during the winter months, and we have about 20,000 square feet under glass. We grow a lot of leafy greens in the wintertime, and there's many items that are fantastic to grow in the wintertime, like arugula, lettuces, kale, spinach, a lot of great items grow in the filtered sunlight in the Rochester winter. So this is actually our season because the customer demand, they really appreciate, I think, having fresh, locally picked greens. We actually plant 5,000 to 10,000 plants a week and harvest that many every week of the year. So it's a kind of an ongoing facility.
John, who are your main customers in the winter months?
Well, I'm actually calling from the Rochester Public Market right now, where we just wrapped up our morning sale on Thursday mornings. So we're on Thursdays. We're also here on Saturday mornings, and then on Brighton on Sunday afternoon and on Idlewood. And we also have a nice following of restaurants. There's a group of restaurants in town that are very passionate about using our greens, and it's okay. I'll at least mention one of them. Lento, for example, buys from us 52 weeks a year. They only use local products and very passionate about it. And also there's some new restaurants like Oxen Stone and Sabone that are also passionate. And the bottom line is we have a nice crew of restaurants we supply also.
John, do you ever get into any debates with people who really want to see organic agriculture and have some sort of an issue with growing in the winter months the way you do it?
Yes, you know, there's still a group of people that want certified organic, which is okay. And the debate is the nutrients, because particularly in the winter, you're going to use some water-soluble iron and other calciums and things like that that you probably see in soil but are considered inorganic. We really look at more of these sprays. We don't do any sprays on our crops. Particularly, we the pesticides. I think you know if you're organic, you're still allowed to use organic pesticides. And we don't even use organic pesticides. We actually use beneficial insects that we release weekly. It's a very expensive proposition to do it in our greenhouses. And they do a fantastic job of providing a clean, healthy product.
And John, just to clarify again, because you brought up the question about nutrients and then, you know, the question about the wider question about nutrition. So if something that's grown at Bolton Farms over the winter, how does that compare nutritionally to products that are grown organically?
I think that the difference is, for example, on our outdoor crops, we actually have horses, we use horse manure on our fields and the crop, so it's fully organic from a nutrient standpoint. The hydroponics, our greenhouses, you do have to supplement with, we'll call it processed nutrients. I would have to say that disqualifies you being considered organic.
Fertilizer, right?
Pardon me? Fertilizer, right.
Yeah, fertilizer, okay. But does that change the quality of the product in terms of nutritionally that you are putting out then?
Not from a total nutritional standpoint. It's just many people are concerned more about the source of that nutrition.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. John, then you might as well answer the question of the hour. What did you have for dinner last night?
I had pizza. Does that qualify? How about the night before?
Yeah, there you go.
The night before market doesn't count.
I appreciate it, though, John. You did not have to say that. You could have given us any answer. What did you have the night before?
I didn't say Schneller's, okay? But the night before we had our, my favorite item is our Swiss chard. It's a good winter grower, and I sauteed that with a little olive oil and garlic. We had our mashed potatoes and some of Seven Bridges Canadian bacon with that. So we generally, at the end of the day, I mean, we do a lot of salads and the arugula and the pea shoots and the microgreens and all that. And sometimes at the end of the day, I'm just too tired to do too much cooking.
Well,
I'm probably the worst person to talk to right now.
What was the product, though, that he mentioned? Dennis, you were nodding right away. I didn't hear what he said. You had last night, what is it called? What was the
Swiss chard?
Oh, the Swiss chard?
Oh, is that what you? I didn't hear him
Swiss
say.
Chard.
Swiss chard. Okay, got it.
I, you know, it's funny. We grow a lot of spinach too, but Swiss chard is my favorite, and we often have that 2-3 times a week. And we do a lot of Asian greens also, and so we always try to have some cooking and a raw green at each dinner. And since we have it right next to the house there, that it's nice and fresh, and it's great. And we enjoy selling the fresh greens in the wintertime because people seem to be so appreciative, particularly at the Brighton market. People are passionate in Brighton like no other community around here relative to getting fresh local produce year-round.
A couple of comments from Twitter. Our Tiny Earth tells us eating local is easier than ever. We eat about 80% local year-round, picking up our turkey on Sunday. And Barry writes in saying, we do tend to eat a lot more meat and chicken in the winter. How can we ensure that we are eating locally sourced meat and chicken? Panel?
Come to the market.
There was a chorus of come to the market
there. Come to the market.
Meet your farmer. Yeah, ask him questions. Dennis and I, we do a lot of summer chickens, and, you know, we raise more than we know we're going to sell that week, and our freezers are full. Ours is depleting, actually. I think we're going to have to put on chickens earlier in the spring than we did. We do turkeys for Thanksgiving. I mean, Dennis is selling frozen chickens.
I've got a full variety of cut parts as well as whole chickens, so you don't have to just say, oh, gosh, what am I going to do with the whole chicken? I've got thigh quarters that I'm selling, boneless breast with the bone in it, chicken wings, legs, hearts, livers, feet.
Necks. There's nobody here on the panel, but there's, you know, local pork and beef.
Yeah, we have two farmers at the Brighton Market, Shannonbrook Farm and Happy Hooves Organic Farm. Both are certified organic farms, and they have beef, pork, duck sometimes, lamb. So, yeah, you can get any kind of local meat and sustainably grown, grass-fed, all the things that a lot of people in our community are looking for that you can't find necessarily at the supermarket. I mean, that's one thing we always say, well, we have local things, and you could probably get that plus more at the supermarket. But grass-fed, local, organic meat is something you cannot find anywhere at Wegmans or any of the local supermarkets. So if you're looking for that, and more people are these days, you've got to come to our market.
I always love talking food, especially with local growers. And in the coming weeks on this program, we're going to have a number of other food topics. You might have heard Michael Pollan and a few others talking about it, their desire to see a new national food policy. We're going to talk about that in this program coming up. And there are some interesting news stories about gestational crating. In New Jersey with the bill that's on Chris Christie's desk right now, we looked into it. New York has legislation about gestational crating. We're going to be doing that on this program coming up soon. And we're always looking for ideas. This whole hour was sparked by a listener's email on how to eat local year-round. But let me start to wrap the conversation with a point that Sue made about making sure that not only you're eating local and that's good for you, but that's good for the farms. So I want to ask, we asked John Bolton, and we'll come back to John, but let me start with Dennis, and we'll go around the room. Lakestone Family Farms, you're obviously out participating in the markets, but where are you selling? Where are your customer base, and how do people find you?
Well, I sell currently exclusively through Farmers Market and CSA program. Now, we don't have a winter CSA program, but we hope to have that in the future. But we're at the Brighton Farmers Market every Sunday, and we're at the Canandaigua Farmers Market every other Saturday.
And that's it? I mean, do people go to you at the source, at the site at all? No?
From time to time, we do on farm sales. It's more of on an appointment sort of basis, and mm-hmm. my information is available online at my website, which is lakestonefamilyfarm.com.
Don't just show up at his house and knock on the doors. Just call. Unless you want to babysit.
Well, you could show up, and I may not be there. If I'm at the market.
That would be it. But how has the winter program impact? I mean, I don't know how long you've been doing the winter program, but how does this impact you?
I've actually, this is with my third season farming, this is my third season winter marketing. This year I've really ramped up production to have product to go through the winter, both storage crops as well as with my chicken. So for me, it's important to make this money now that I need to make to support myself, especially for coming into spring when we do a lot more planting. Our payroll increases tremendously, and it's really nice to be able to have the money to pay the staff to have, the summer go as well.
Yeah. Paul Loomis, where do people find your stuff? Paul is from Growing Family Farms.
You can find us at Brighton. And, I just want to say the Brighton market is, I really think what drives that market is the quality of the products there. And I don't think you can get better stuff anywhere in this area. From like Sue said, the bread, the cheese, you can do a full grocery cart there, and for the week. And I think a lot of us all do that. And you can also find my product at through Good Food Collective through mm-hmm. the winter shares. And I think the winter markets have done a lot for the farmers in means of pushing them to have product for the winter. I think we've all pushed ourselves to create better displays and more appealing vegetables for the winter to bring the customers in. And the more the farmers do this collectively, the more customers come to the market, which can continue to thrive through this season.
It just sounds like creating a culture of just the expectation to eat local year-round.
Sure.
That we don't have to hit this wall. Sandy, where do they find Fisher Hill Farms?
For the most part, it will be the retail locations or, the farmers markets, Brighton, Canandaigua, Rochester Public Market. We do some through the Good Food Collective, through the shares, or they have a wholesale end, so some of it will end up at restaurants. Some schools take some of the root crops. A little bit on farm, but not really. It really is it doesn't sound like a lot. When we were here in the summer, we were listing off a page full of places
yeah.
that you could go. But these really are intense, really quick, a little burst of local food action right here, so come be a part of it. We've got the fresh turkeys for Thanksgiving this week. We'll have the chickens frozen, and we have egg. We did add on eggs, and we also, like Paul and Dennis are saying, knowing that this is here in the spring, you order the seed and you do things to plan for a bigger winter market every year than you had the year before. So more storage cabbages, turnips and rutabagas, not just one or the other.
Yeah,
this year.
Right.
The people are there. It sort of is a chicken and the egg. Are you ready to take on that risk of planting more and hoping the customers will be there? But they have yet to disappoint us. So It's an exciting time to be in the local food movement here.
And John Bolton of Bolton Farms, 30 seconds, at least it sounds like you are seeing demand continue to rise, and I think that's a good sign for your industry.
Absolutely. I think you can say that it's probably we could sell three times what we're currently producing because the demand has been fantastic.
John, thanks for calling in and taking the time to join the program.
Thank you.
And our appreciation as well for this panel who've come in on this. Well, it's turned into a sunny winter day. At least we're not Buffalo. And you know what I take from this hour? I take from this hour part of what Paul just said here. It's kind of just creating this culture and challenging ourselves. I mean, you know, we may not be absolutists. You may not be able to have a local meal every single time, especially in the winter. But if you really make it part of the effort and the intention, it's probably pretty amazing what we can do, what the impact would be for local farms. So really great stuff. We appreciate it. Sue Gardner-Smith at the Brighton Farmers Market. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
The Farmers Market is when, Sue?
Sundays, 1 to 4 p.m. BrightonFarmersMarket.org has all the details.
Very good. And Sandy, I know you're out at Canandaigua. Fisher Hill Farms is out of Canandaigua every other Saturday, 10 to 11.
Yep, right behind Burn Dairy on South Main Street.
See you there, and thanks for taking
this
the time
Saturday,
to come in.
Yep.
Dennis LaPelle, Lakestone Family Farm. Dennis, you never talk anymore.
I know.
So nice sad. To see you.
Likewise.
Paul Loomis, Growing Family Farms. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Cheers, everybody. Short break, and Rochester Brainery is in next hour. Stay with us.